a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
House taxation will come to order. Reminder to everybody here in attendance today, please shut off your cell phones or put the library battery on. At this point, I'll have the secretary call the order. Call the roll.
Representatives Kirschman,
here.
Feinstein, Peterson,
here.
Hunhoff, Latterell,
here.
Russell,
here.
Solem,
here.
Norstrup,
here.
Rosum,
here.
Erickson,
here.
Duvall,
here.
Rasmussen,
here.
Anderson,
here.
Wick, Greenfield,
here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
A quorum is present, and we will proceed with our hearing. Reminder, anybody who wishes to testify, please sign in at the back. I see that we have a couple people there right now. The minutes from the previous meeting are online and available. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
It's moved by Representative Rosum, seconded by Representative Solem to approve the minutes. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed will say no. The minutes are approved. With that, when we left off last time, the Department of Revenue had been presenting. We have a couple presenters to go here. Secretary Gerlach, did you want to introduce your first presenter?
I will, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and thanks for having us back. Andy Gerlach, Secretary of Revenue, and it's good to be back and finish up the roundup. A brief recap of when we talked a week ago today. We went through our department and then talked about Tally Payer and her interactions with the Corner Gas in all of our hometowns. And Motor Vehicle talked about how they work with Corner Gas on licensing, fuel tax, plate renewal and distribution. Property Special Taxes talked about how they assess Corner Gas and the taxes and compliance checks they have with that particular business. The lottery talked about the scratch ticket and lotto tickets and video lottery that Corner Gas has. The Business Tax Division, who works closely with them, talks about their licensing, different taxes. And I think you saw a really good example on the receipt of how different taxes apply in different organizations and then the education that goes with that. And then Bruce Christensen, our audit director, I thought did a good job of talking about how we do audits, and sometimes that's a mystery to people, and then the compliance, and then also the education that goes with audits. So the next in line that goes after audits, and it makes sense, is our legal division. And our chief legal counsel, Andy Fergal, will talk about some of the things that they do to support not only the department, but work with businesses, too, from the legal end. So, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Andy.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Morning, Mr. Fergal.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Andy Fergal with the South Dakota Department of Revenue, and I'm chief legal counsel there. As we heard when we presented last week, the Corner Gas Station is required to hold several licenses to conduct its business in your hometown. Some of the licenses that you heard they were required to have were alcoholic beverage licenses, which were subject to compliance checks by local law enforcement, lottery licenses, sales and use tax licenses, and contractors' excise tax licenses potentially. But the Corner Grocery, they would have just simply needed a sales and use tax license. There were also maybe marketer fuel licenses that they needed. And the sales and use tax license that we were talking about, those are specifically subject to audit by the audit division with the Department of Revenue. All these licenses that Corner Gas would hold are subject to revocation, suspension, cancellation, or non-renewal if the department finds that Corner Gas is not following the rules required to hold the licenses set by the legislature. I'm here to tell you that if the department does move to revoke, suspend, cancel, or non-renew a license, the Corner Gas would have a right to due process and may request an administrative hearing before the Office of Hearing Examiners. And that's the procedure that we would use to give those folks due process. They would go before the Office of Hearing Examiners. They would present their case. The hearing examiner hearing the case would propose a decision to the Secretary of the Department of Revenue, and then the Secretary would make a final decision concerning the matter. Once the Secretary issues a final decision, the business, if they're still aggrieved by that decision, have a right to appeal that decision to the Circuit Court. If after the Circuit Court proceedings they're still aggrieved, that taxpayer would have a right to appeal that matter all the way up to the Supreme Court. And that same process holds true for an audit. If we audit somebody and issue a certificate of assessment and the taxpayer disagrees with what we have assessed, they again have a right to a due process hearing, and they can take that matter all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the same is true with compliance checks regarding alcohol licenses. If we find somebody because they failed a compliance check, or we suspend or revoke their alcoholic beverage license because of license or compliance check failures, they also have a right to a due process hearing and can appeal that matter all the way up to the Supreme Court. So in addition to those things, we also support all the divisions in legal in the Department of Revenue, providing advice regarding the law and the like to anybody working for the department if they have questions regarding the law. So unless there's questions, I'll turn this over now to Larry Eliason, the Executive Secretary of the South Dakota Gaming Commission.
Just hang tight. I see we do have one question. Representative Wick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Fergal, just a curiosity question, but you say they'd have the right to go all the way to the Supreme Court, whether it was a revocation or a question over an audit. Do you have any idea what it would cost them to do that?
Represent our Chairman Griefmeier.
Go ahead, please.
Really, I don't. I mean, I could give you a guess. Maybe Representative Russell might be able to give you a better guess. I've been out of private practice for a long time, so I don't know what a lawyer would charge to go ahead and appeal that all the way up to the Supreme Court. So any number I'd give you would just be a pure guess.
Okay, thank you. I'll ask the two attorneys that are on the...
I think the answer is two. It costs too much. All right. Any other questions for Mr. Fergal? Mr. Eliason. Thank you, Mr. Fergal.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. As Andy said, my name is Larry Eliason. I'm Executive Secretary of the South Dakota Commission on Gaming. And our commission is a little bit different than all of the other folks that you heard from last week and today. The commission is a five-member board appointed by the governor, of course, part-time, like most boards and commissions are. The folks that talk to you about sales tax and motor vehicles and alcoholic beverages and tobacco products and lottery and video lottery operate in every community and every county in the state. The activities that we regulate and that we collect the tax from are literally few and far between, but they are located in every corner of the state except the northwest corner, and we do have a lot of horse racing licensees that live in that area. We regulate the live horse racing tracks at Aberdeen and Fort Pierre in the spring. We have what are called OTBs, or off-track betting parlors, in North Sioux City and Rapid City, where a person can walk in there and place a bet and watch a race from California, New York, or Florida, and watch it live on TV. We have an account wagering hub, an advanced deposit hub in Sioux Falls, and we administer the gaming compacts with the eight tribes that have gaming compacts. Well, of course, our biggest focus and our biggest area of responsibility is the regulation and collecting of the taxes and auditing of the casinos, the commercial casinos in Deadwood. There is some significant differences in regulation of pari-mutuel gaming and commercial gaming, and I've got a drawing that illustrates that, if my technician could put up the next screen. He doesn't get to shuffle the horses. And That's, of course, it was a cartoon. I keep that in my office, and it was designed to be funny, and it is, but it shows the difference in that at the tracks, the bettors are not participants. You've got eight jockeys that are riding the horses, but the people that are betting are in the grandstands, or in the case of the OTVs, they're watching a race that's being run in California. In the commercial casinos, the bettors are involved in the games. They're playing the slot machines. They're playing the card games. And we don't have any authority to suspend or to fine a non-licensed person. And we're going to be bringing in some legislation this session to enhance our exclusion list so that we can have some authority over people who do things that they shouldn't do. And later in the session, I'll be talking in detail about that bill and at the appropriate time and at the appropriate forums. We talked last week about Tally Payer, and we knew that she was in Pier. If you remember the receipt that the sales tax folks showed you, they applied the Pier municipal sales tax. What they didn't tell you was that was on a Saturday in April, and she was on her way to Deadwood to meet some friends, but she stopped at the Fort Pier track, and she put down a $2 bet on the horse races there. The tax there is 4.5%, and that's included in the cost of the ticket. She doesn't pay $2.09 for the bet. She pays $2 for the bet. The taxes that we collect from the tracks and from the simulcasting and the off-track betting is dedicated by law for the commission to provide to those tracks at Fort Pier and Aberdeen for their operations. That source of revenue is down. This past fiscal year, it was down almost 25% from the year before, and that's reflective, really, of the national trend in Parimutuel. Our taxpayer goes out to Deadwood, where she meets some friends and plays some slot machines. The taxes on the Deadwood casinos is 9% of the amount that the casino keeps on the bet, plus $2,000 per device once a year, and a device is a slot machine or a blackjack table or a poker table. And those two revenue sources are about equal. Last fiscal year, the gaming tax, which is the 9% of the win, was 56% of the total revenue that we received, and the device fees, the $2,000 per machine, was 44%. Of that 9% tax, 1% is a fairly new tax that was passed late in the Rounds administration. That goes directly to the state general fund. The other taxes are distributed in a formula set out in statute. Most of that goes to the city of Deadwood. The Department of Tourism also receives some money. The general fund receives some money. And then smaller amounts go to Lawrence County, the school districts in Lawrence County. And if they receive state aid, then their state aid is offset. And also the other cities besides Deadwood in Lawrence County. Up to $35,000 goes to DSS for them to pass on as grants to clinics that treat problem gambling clients. And $100,000 a year by statute goes to the Office of Historic Preservation over in the Cultural Heritage Center. They just recently announced some grants earlier this month of $16,000 apiece for restoration projects to the Brown County Courthouse, the Bank of Iroquois, the Sioux Falls Quartzite Paver Alley, and I'll defer to Representative Wick to tell us what the Quartzite Paver Alley is, because I've never heard of it, but it's in Sioux Falls, and also to restore a historic barn in the Woonsocket area. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand by for questions.
Other questions? Representative Kirschman.
How many dog betting tracks do we have?
None anymore. We used to have two. We had one at North Sioux City and one at Rapid City. Those closed about 1990.
Okay.
Other questions?
But you can bet on dogs at those simulcast parlors that I mentioned. You can bet on Florida and Alabama dog track.
Representative Russell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious, in more of a general form, I know that I've seen a number of press reports and different things over the years as to the trajectory of video lottery and the gaming, and I'm a little curious as to how things are going and I know that I probably am, but I'm specifically interested in deadwood, whether we're appreciating or there's a little bit of a reduction, also in the video lottery as a whole, and as to whether or not we keep any information as to the tribal gaming and the trajectory of that entities. And if you can't answer it, that's fine, but it's just a curiosity that I always have and thought that I would take this opportunity to ask.
Okay. So. Mr. Chairman, I can answer some of those questions. I'll try to start backward. I don't have any numbers on the tribal properties, and those are usually not published site specific. The National Indian Gaming Commission does some regional multi-state compilations, but I don't know of anywhere that there's public data on a particular tribal entity. As to Deadwood, the numbers are down. Our calendar year to date on the gaming tax is about 3.25% below where it was last year. We don't have any applications pending for new projects in Deadwood. It's a matter of public record that the Miss Kitty's property, which was a long one of the original properties, closed a couple of months ago. As to the lottery, I'd have to defer to the folks to the lottery on for that information. I don't have the lottery.
Thank you. Yesterday, Commerce heard a fairly thorough report on all things lottery in the state. Mr. Lingle from the office would be the one. He was here last week, but he'd be the one to refer some of those questions to. Anything further, Mr. Elias, and any further questions from the committee?
If there are no further questions, I'll go back to my racing analogy and turn the reins over to Secretary Gerlach to get us to the finish line.
I think Representative Wick may wish to answer the question that was posed a few moments ago before the wrap-up.
I think if Mr. Lyason remembers when, this won't take but a minute, Mr. Gerlach, Secretary Gerlach, but when you were in Sioux Falls back in the 76th Street, a block south of the cathedral,
okay,
was pavers all the way up, and they're just little, they're almost like a brick, but they're a little bigger, a little thicker. And that was one of the roughest streets in the city, and it was straight uphill. I mean, it was the one of the steepest hills, if you know what the hill going up to the cathedral's like. But there's still an alley between 6th and 7th and Duluth and Spring, which is just to the south of the cathedral, that's still pavers.
Well, thank you.
It's kind of an interesting street.
Thank you, Mr. Eliason. Mr. Secretary.
Mr. Chairman. Good to be back. Andy Gerlach again, Secretary of Revenue. Thanks again for having us come in brief. And what we wanted to do this year is obviously tell each of you about the department, tell you about the taxes, but also tell you some of the interactions that we have within the department that, in my opinion, makes sense to have all of our taxing entities, our motor vehicle entity, and our gaming entities under one hat. And I'm very proud of how they all work together. And I think you see in our example with Tally Payer and in the corner gas that there are synergies there that help us accomplish our mission. So, arguably, from the time you get your driver's license to every transaction that you make in the state of South Dakota at a retail store to gaming activities that you enjoy, you interact with the Department of Revenue, and we touch a lot of South Dakotans, as you see, and we take that very seriously, and we take our relationships with them very seriously. So it's good to come and talk to the tax committee and tell you a little bit about what we do. So I'm going to hit on two more items that I think may be of interest to you, and then I'll open it up to any questions. One of the things we didn't talk about is our relationships with the 9 tribes in South Dakota. We have tax collection agreements with 8 out of the 9 tribes in which we work with them to ensure that taxes from non-tribal members are remitted to the state. Taxes from tribal members are remitted to the tribe. We do much of the administration and help them, each tribe, with that. So it's important to tribal relations. It's important to how we do business. It's important to how we serve our citizens. We also have gaming compacts with 8 out of the 9 tribes. The only tribe that does not have a casino is Cheyenne River, and we obviously don't have a gaming compact with them. But there again, we get into relationship building and compacts that are mutually beneficial, that allow us to regulate gaming and work closely with the tribe. So those are important things that we do, and I wanted to make the committee aware of that. The last thing I'll hit on, Mr. Chair, is federal legislation and issues at the federal level. We obviously know that tax issues at the federal level have an effect at the state level. For many years, as you know, South Dakota has been part of the streamlined sales tax effort. The streamlined effort is made up of 27 states now that are full members that try to work together cross borders to try to have some type of standardization in tax policy, that if you're a business doing that has operations in many states, we try to simplify how you put forth your tax and how we administer it. So it's an ongoing project. It's something we are very proud of and put a lot of effort in to try to simplify taxes for businesses, not only in South Dakota, but across the country. Similarly, there's legislation in Congress right now called the Marketplace Fairness Act. You may have heard of that. The Marketplace Fairness Act, the genesis of that is to allow states to garner tax revenues from online purchases. It's obviously become very important in recent years as we see e-commerce becoming more prevalent. This past year, e-commerce was up 17% across the country. South Dakota, in our estimates, loses out at about $60 million a year for both state and local taxes through e-commerce transactions that we do not recover tax from. We currently have about 1,800 businesses that voluntarily license with us and remit tax, but that's obviously a drop in the bucket because Amazon and Overstock and many of these companies do not, and you know how many people purchase from that, and for us to get the use tax out of that is very challenging. So Marketplace Fairness passed through the Senate. It's in the House Judiciary Committee in Congress right now, so keep your eye on that. You'll see some articles in the newspaper from time to time. Obviously, the larger online companies aren't real supportive of it, and there's some amendments that people are trying to put on it to try to limit it. I hope Congress can do the right thing, though, and keep up with the times and allow states to tax online transactions that happen in their jurisdiction. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will close our formal portion of the brief and turn it back over to you and take any questions that the committee would like.
Questions of the committee. Representative Kirschman.
I'm not sure which staffer. We got told about lottery yesterday, but in the last 2 years, we voted to raise the betting limit in Deadwood to $1,000. Mm-hmm. It's kind of upsetting to hear that it's not improving, and that was supposed to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, so what happened?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to make a couple comments on that, and I'm going to answer Representative Russell's question as well. Gaming in every aspect is challenged, and it's not only in South Dakota, but it's across the country. I think one of the biggest challenges is that you're competing for the entertainment dollar, not only in gaming, but what people want to do in general. If people want to go to a movie or go to a video lottery casino or go to Deadwood or go to Larchwood or go to a football game in Augustana College in Sioux Falls, I really think that you're all competing for the same entertainment dollar. I also think that demographic challenges are hurting us. If you would look, and I don't have anything scientific, but all you have to do is look and see who's at casinos or video lottery establishments. Those people aren't getting any younger, and you don't have a heck of a lot of young people you see walking out the front door of those. So, you know, I go to gaming and lottery conferences that are held annually across the country and get to listen to some pretty smart businessmen that run these operations, and they are challenged by the fact that are we getting a new age and demographic of gamers that are interested? And the long story short is that no, and it's having an impact on revenue. So I think, you know, you could say smoking ban, you can say a lot of different things, but I just think, you know, that younger demographic of gamers just really isn't supplementing what's been there in the past.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Other questions? Representative Solem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the Secretary, I missed that number. The loss in sales tax from online, $60 million or 16?
Mr. Chairman, $60 million, $60 million dollars a year, roughly $40 million we estimate to the state, $20 million to municipal government. That's just based on the percentages.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hunhoff.
Mr. Chairman, Secretary Gerlach, thanks for bringing up the compacts that we have with the tribes, interesting thing that I don't know much about. And I like the way you did the presentation with the corner store. Mm-hmm. So if there's a corner store on a reservation, how do we, and I heard you say that we tried to collect from the non-tribal members for the state, and then we give the tribal receipts to the reservation. I'm clumsily saying this. How do we determine that in the sales?
Sure.
Please.
It's a great question. When we get into a tax collection agreement, one of the things that we look at is the percentages of tribal versus non-tribal. We use census data to base those percentages on each tribe. So, for example, we just got into a new tax collection agreement last month with Standing Rock, in half in South Dakota, half in North Dakota. So, for example, if the coroner gas was in McLaughlin, what we will do is we'll go back to the tax collection agreement, and I think the latest figures were that 20% of that tribal area is non-tribal, 80% of it is tribal. So on a transaction with that store, the state would get back 20% because we would just say that's the non-tribal percentage. The tribe would get back 80%. So Representative, it's built into the tax collection agreement, and then each of the retailers on that particular reservation will charge that rate or will remit that rate back to them based on that.
Further questions, Representative Latterell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Secretary Gerlach, I read in the Capital Journal just about the Gaming Commission and how they were attempting to find ways to get younger people into the gambling, and I guess I've always been a little bit skeptical of video lottery specifically, just because I wanted to make sure that it's actually being used by as an entertainment avenue. And do you have a general feeling for who, do you have a study, and do you have a general feeling for which players are you getting 90% of your revenue from 10% of the players, and do you have data like that would track usage that I could look at?
Sure.
Mr. Secretary.
We are developing more now. We just actually last year the legislature gave us the authority and an FTE to hire a marketing research analyst representative. It is something that we hadn't done in the past, but obviously we want to do more. I don't have anything right now that I could give you in terms of scientific, but I want to in the future.
Follow-up, Representative Latterell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to reiterate, I'd have a concern about people becoming addicted to gambling or using it in an unfair way, and I guess I'm concerned. My feeling is that there's a large portion of our revenues that do come from those who probably shouldn't be spending as much as they are in entertainment, and you know we do want to attract people who it is an entertainment avenue, possibly, you know, from a revenue standpoint, but I'd like to actually see the gambling revenues go down and try to figure out how to make that up other places. So it's just a comment, follow-up.
Understand.
Care to comment on the comment?
Sure. No, I understand completely. And when our business obviously has some pluses and minuses, and we're very conscious of that. We have roughly $200,000 in our video lottery budget that if we have, if there's someone that's identified as a problem gambler through the Department of Social Services, we will pay for that person's treatment and we'll reimburse social services for that. I understand gaming and lottery and gambling, everybody has their own stance on it, and I respect all of those stances as well, Representative. It's not something that we take lightly, I'll tell you that.
Representative Feinstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. For Secretary Gerlach, a question to follow up on Representative Hunoff's question. I was always given the understanding that, let's say the city or McLaughlin or that you used, if they bought, if a person bought a T-shirt for, let's say, $10, there is a city tax or tribal tax of 2% or 1%, whatever the rate is that they've established, and the 4% city tax, or is that not, and that's not the case on reservations, and maybe that's not the right example. But isn't there, don't they also charge like the city tax or the 2% or up to 2% for the tribe? And then we all also share, like in that case, 80-20 with them on the 4%? Are two different rates there?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Are two different taxes, city and state, or tribal and state?
Secretary,
I'm trying to recall in the tax collection agreement, and if I could, you know, Deputy Wiest wrote that, and to answer your question specifically, Dave, do you have some insight on how we would do that in McLaughlin? It's okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Representative, how it works mechanically is our tax collection agreements cover the state sales tax of 4%. We do not cover any municipal sales taxes in a tax collection agreement. So at the corner grocery store in McLaughlin, South Dakota, when someone makes a sales taxable purchase, that 4% is split evenly between, well, not evenly, it's split pursuant to the tax collection agreement between the state of South Dakota and the tribe where the convenience store is located. In this case, it's the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Regarding the municipal sales taxes, they are not part of a tax collection agreement. We don't participate in splitting those up one way or the other. Is that?
Yeah, a quick follow-up.
Please.
So, and I just pointed out McLaughlin because that's what you said. So if you're in, and there may be more, but if you go down to Rosebud or any of those areas which are wholly internal and they're not split between other states, be the same thing then. If they have a tribal, a municipal tribal tax or whatever they would call it of 2%, that's theirs regardless, but the 4% would be split based on your agreement.
Mr. Chairman,
please.
How our tax collection agreement works is that we say to a tribe that we have an agreement with, we have a 4% state sales tax. You have to have an identical 4% tribal sales tax. So we tax all comers on the sales tax. All the money is put in the pot, the split applied. Whether a tribe imposes any other tax is really up to the tribe.
All right. I'd like to thank the Secretary and Deputy Secretary and all those from the department who have been before us testifying. We can probably direct further questions through the gentleman here at the table, and they'll see to it that the question is answered by the proper folks. With that, we are going to move on. I would like to recognize, first of all, I have to say, yesterday when I was trying to announce on the floor that we would hear from the department and then have two bill hearings, I got talking too fast. I usually talk slowly. And when I said two bill hearings, it came out as two beer, and Representative Turbeville must have decided to try to take me up on that. Former Representative Turbeville is in the audience. Could we please have a round of applause for him? And if I could get our page to step forward, introduce herself, tell us where you're from, where you're heading after this, anything of interest.
Hi, I'm Tiara Tingle. I go to Brandon Valley High School, and I think after this I'll probably be going to UNL to study pre-law. So, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. We will have two bills up. I don't anticipate a lot of handouts, but if there are any, please send them to the committee members through the page. And with that, I will open up a hearing on House Bill 1055, which is an act to revise certain provisions regarding references to the Internal Revenue Code. We are now taking proponent testimony on House Bill 1055. Proponents on House Bill 1055. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Mike Howdyshell at the Department of Revenue. We bring House Bill 1055 today as our annual update to certain references to the Internal Revenue Code that we have in state statute. Again, this is an annual update that we bring to this committee and to the legislature every year. I'll quickly just run through the sections just to give you an overview. Sections 1 through 5 concern property tax exemptions for certain tax-exempt entities, and essentially what these provisions do is they designate recognized nonprofit organizations by the IRS. Sections 6 through 10 concern definitions for income used as criteria for certain property tax relief programs that the state offers and for purposes of bank franchise tax. Again, we rely on the federal government's definition, the Internal Revenue Code definition for income in these particular statutes. And then finally, in Section 11, this concerns a definition of a nonprofit organization for purposes of alcoholic beverage licensing. So it's just an annual cleanup. We're just changing some dates to make sure that we're using the most current version of the Internal Revenue Code in our state statutes. And with that, I would ask for your favorable consideration of 1055, and I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Howdyshell. Are there further proponents on House Bill 1055? Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1055? Seeing none, I'll open it up to opponent testimony on House Bill 1055. Any opponents on House Bill 1055? Seeing none, I will close testimony. I will open it up for committee questions. Representative Wick, do you have one? Oh, his hand was halfway up. Oh, any questions of the committee? Seeing none, I will open it up for committee action and or discussion. Representative Solem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Move to pass.
Been moved by Representative Solem, seconded by Representative Feinstein. Do pass. Any comments on that motion?
No.
Any comments? Seeing none, those in favor will say aye. Those opposed will say no. The Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Kirschman?
Aye.
Feinstein?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Latterell?
Aye.
Russell?
Aye.
Solem? Nordstrup?
Aye.
Rosum?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Duvall?
Aye.
Rasmussen?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Wick?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, that's 15 yea, 0 nay.
House Bill 1055, having received a majority, in fact, a unanimous vote of the members elect, is declared passed. And there's been a consent motion by Representative Duvall, seconded by Representative Rosum. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed will say no. House Bill 1055 will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation on the consent calendar. Representative Rasmussen, would you care to carry that in our caucus? And Representative Feinstein, would you take that to yours? Thank you. And I will now, as soon as it pulls up, here we go. I'll now open up the committee hearing on House Bill 1057, which is an act to repeal certain provisions imposing the inheritance tax and the estate tax. House Bill 1057 is now up for proponent testimony. Mr. Howdyshell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mike Houdyshell with the Department of Revenue. House Bill 1057 is brought to you by the Department of Revenue today to repeal certain chapters of state law concerning the inheritance tax and the estate tax. Due to past changes in state and federal law, both of these chapters, or actually the three chapters that are in the bill, are obsolete, and the imposition administration statute should be removed from the code. If you recall, in 2000, voters approved an initiated measure which added Article 11, Section 15 to the South Dakota Constitution. And this new provision reads that no tax may be levied on any inheritance, and the legislature may not enact any laws imposing such a tax. And the clause became effective on July 1, 2001. But there was a 12-year statute of limitations for the inheritance tax in statute. So, therefore, as of June 30, 2013, there's no longer any potential inheritance tax liability due and owing to the state, and therefore the inheritance tax statutes are unnecessary and can be repealed. As far as the estate tax provisions, well, the estate tax was based on the state death tax credits, which were found on the federal estate and gift tax return. And the federal government phased out the state death tax credits in 2003. So therefore, the state has not collected any estate tax for a number of years. And unless the federal government chooses to reenact the state death tax credits, which I would say is probably unlikely, in particular in the near term, South Dakota will no longer collect any estate tax as well. So we feel that those statutes are obsolete and should be repealed. With that, Mr. Chair, I would ask for the committee's favorable consideration of House Bill 1057 to get rid of some obsolete statutes from the code. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1057. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1057. Seeing none, I will open it up to opponent testimony on House Bill 1057. Any opponents on House Bill 1057? Seeing none, I will close the testimony and I will open it up for committee questions. Question, Representative Wick.
Just one, and I don't know if Mr. Houdyshell was here back in 2000 when this happened, but
probably in high school.
Yeah, I know at that time there were outstanding estates, one in particular that was, those have all been closed out and completed, I assume.
Sir?
Mr. Chair? The last time that the state has received any revenue from the inheritance tax was in 2011. I believe it was $154 or something like that. The last 2 years we haven't had any revenue. And now that the statute of limitations has run, effectively any potential liability has been cut off.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Feinstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the question by Representative Wick was pretty much the same as what mine was, and I thought there could be some lingering, but the SOL sort of chops it, and that answers the question. Thank you.
SOL. Any further questions of the committee? I've never heard the statute of limitations referred to as such.
SOL.
Any further questions? Seeing none, I will close that portion of the committee hearing, and I will open it up for committee discussion or action.
Duval.
Representative Duval has moved due pass, seconded by Representative Russell, I believe. Any comments on that?
No.
Any discussion of the committee? Representative Feinstein?
Just any time we can wipe out 76 pages of code and without any implications otherwise, I think that's a great idea.
All right. I did hear a little bleep back here. I'm not sure if that was a computer or a phone, but... We'll talk about that later. At this point, I will ask that those in favor will say aye, those opposed say no, and the secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Kirschman?
Aye.
Feinstein?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Latterell?
Aye.
Russell?
Aye.
Solem?
Aye.
Nordstrup?
Aye.
Rosem?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Duval?
Aye.
Rasmussen? Anderson?
Aye.
Wick?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, that's 15 ayes, 0 nays.
House Bill 1057, having received a unanimous vote once again of the members-elect, is declared passed. Representative Solem has moved that we place that on the consent calendar. It's been seconded by Representative Erickson. Although Representative Feinstein wants to hear it, did you want to carry it?
Sure.
Representative Feinstein will carry it in his caucus as well as on the floor. Representative Anderson, would you take that to our caucus? All right. Thank you. With that, I don't believe there's any further business to come before the committee. I would point out that we have a very heavy bill load. We have two bills still outstanding, the two bills that have been assigned to our committee at this point. I would say that in all likelihood we won't have a meeting next Tuesday. We'll see what happens today with bill assignments, but we'll probably be looking at next Thursday. So once again, you'd be looking at an extended weekend, another night with the family probably. So with that, a motion, Representative Latterell.
I move
that move. That motion is in order. Moved by Representative Latterell, seconded by Representative Solem, that we adjourn. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed will say no. We are adjourned.
Right.
Thank you, everybody.